the Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Electric Ireland. Keep your energy costs under control with Ireland's leading business electricity provider.
Hello again, you're listening to The Business. We gave a mention last week to our next business get-together, our business networking event. It is taking place in Dublin later this month on the evening of Wednesday, the 26th of February, in the Croke Park Conference Centre. And it is in association with our sponsors, Electric Ireland. It's about getting people together to make new connections and grow business. We'll have speed networking, guest speakers and lots more on the night. We've hosted many of these events around the country and it's always great for us to hear your stories, many of which we have then featured on the programme actually. And it is of course free to attend, so if you would like to come along, please email to thebusinessgettogether@rte.ie. And don't forget that we have a competition for you this morning inspired by Satya Nadella, Microsoft's new chief executive, and his paraphrasing of an Oscar Wilde quote in his introductory message to his staff. This is what he said, we need to believe in the impossible and remove the improbable, as he was trying to inspire those people. So this morning we want to hear from you about your own favourite inspirational quote. The prize is our favourite is an overnight stay with dinner for two people at the Shelbourne Hotel in the heart of Dublin, just around the corner from the famous Oscar Wilde statue in Merrion Square. And you can contact us with your entries or with anything else in relation to the programme by text to 51551, by phone to 1857 15150, email to thebusiness@rte.ie, or tweet to @thebusinessRTE. And some of your quotes so far here, and well, here's one. My bed is made in the gutter, but I won't lie down. It's a quote from Mick Flannery, and that came in from Colette in Galway. One of my favourite quotes is, an expert is someone who knows more and more about less and less. And that's from Dave in Atgarvan in Kildare. So do keep them coming. Well, the favourite quote of my next guest is, it is the dead that teach the living. Richard Grossman is a professor of economics at the Wesleyan University in Connecticut and a visiting scholar at Harvard, and the author of a new book called Wrong: 9 Economic Disasters and What We Could Learn from Them. Richard, why did you write this book?
Well, I wrote the book because I was interested in trying to find out if there were any commonalities when looking at economic crises and bad economic policy, to see if we could find something that was consistent across them. When we study economic crises, we tend to look at one in particular. We look at this bad economic policy or that economic crisis in isolation. And so my idea was to look across a number and see if we could find common themes in them.
Did you find common themes?
I did. And the biggest one was that we make the worst policy mistakes when we make our economic policy on the basis of ideology as opposed to on the basis of sound economic analysis.
What about the Irish famine? Because I noticed that you focus on that in the book as one of the major economic crises from which maybe lessons weren't learned.
At the beginning of the famine, the British Prime Minister, Sir Robert Peel, basically took whatever actions he could to help alleviate the famine. He ordered grain from the United States, which he apparently did without parliamentary authorization. He had the corn laws repealed, which basically had increased the price of grain, and did what he could. This was not very popular with his Conservative Party because they were representing in large part the landed aristocracy. And so he was voted out of office and replaced with the Liberal Party's Lord John Russell. John Russell had a very distinct ideology, and that is we should not get in the way of markets. Markets know best. And I know this, no one ever thinks that way today, but the notion that markets never make mistakes was really deeply embedded in how he conducted business. So he said, we're not going to intervene in the grain markets in Ireland. If we intervene in the grain markets in Ireland, it might stop Irish people from coming to Britain to help in the harvest. So the death toll was horrific. And in large measure, I mean, the fact is the famine was horrible and it would have had devastating effects in any case. But the fact of the matter is that because the prime minister and his government were so committed to maintaining this ideology of free markets, that the effect on Ireland was horrific.
Now, one of the things which I think you note in the book, I think maybe one of your theses is a reference to Mark Twain, that history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
It does indeed.
Have you seen that kind of history rhyming?
A lot does. I'd say most primarily in the financial crisis realm. If you look back over the last 200 or so years, the financial crises are incredibly, there's this incredible sense of deja vu whenever you get back into them, because the most of the major financial crises during the last 200 years have been brought about by what I would call a boom-bust macroeconomic cycle. You know, in previous crises, different assets were caught up. During the Bearing crisis in 1890, it was Latin American debt securities. During the Overend Gurney crisis in Britain in the 1860s, it was this new thing called limited liability companies. And other times it had been grain, railroads, all manner of different types of assets. Well, in the subprime crisis, it was subprime mortgages, that is, home loans for borrowers who were of somewhat lower credit quality. And that just became such a speculative asset.
One of the things which I wonder whether it, whether you have a view on it, but certainly seems to drive some of these crises, is greed. Again and again, and we never learn.
That's true. You know, as an economist, I feel like we're all driven by greed. In fact, I'd say that we're all driven by two, we have these two emotions within us. We've got fear and we've got greed. In the case of financial crises, look, if you see the stock market going up or subprime-backed securities going up and up and up in value, at some point you say, well, you know, if I can invest in this and make 10%, then, or 20%, well, then I can borrow. And instead of investing 100 euros in it, I can invest 1,000 or 10,000. So I just get more and more into debt and borrow more money to buy a house or to just invest in property or in these securities. That's the greed. The fear is that, well, you know, if something goes south, if something goes bad, then I'm going to lose a lot of money. And what happens is in these boom-bust cycles is that greed takes over. Fear is relegated because fear is relegated to the background because we're so interested, because we're so taken up in the upswing in prices and this and the money to be made hand over fist, that we completely forget about the dangers and we go straight on and we sort of lose ourselves. And that's why part of the problem in the case of the subprime crisis was regulation. But the fact of the matter is, when the incentives are strong enough, people will take the risk. When the profits are so big and are just looming in front of your eyes, very few people are able to say, no, I think maybe I've had enough. I'll step back from the table and I won't put any more money on this. There are, in most of the cases that I describe, at some point, someone said, you know, this really isn't such a good idea. We have to think about it. But again, they get sort of overwhelmed by by the forces of greed. And as an economist, in some sense, greed is unavoidable. Greed is in some ways good. It's why we work hard. It's we want to make a better lives for our families and for our children. So in some sense, being greedy in the sense of being ambitious is not a terrible thing. But when we start taking risks and the risks become all out of proportion with the reward, then we get in serious difficulties.
You've been meeting our own central bankers this week. What have you been saying to them?
Well, I've been saying a lot of these things. What I spoke to them last night about the problem of ideology and old ways getting sort of locked in. It seems to me that, you know, 50 years ago, virtually every country's central banker would have been a native of that country. They probably would have spent their entire career in the central bank. Now you have this trend across the world where you have, how shall I say it, foreigners who are running national central banks or people who spent considerable amount of time out of this country. So, for example, the governor of the Central Bank of Ireland spent a number of years working for the World Bank. The deputy governor, one of the deputy governors is Swedish. I think the other one might be French. And of course, famously, the Bank of England has a Canadian as their governor. I think these are all good things because what you see after the financial crisis, there were a couple of reports on the Bank of England in 2012. And one of the striking things about the reports was that while the staff at the Bank of England, the junior staff, were quite competent and quite good, they would tend to shade their advice because they didn't want to give advice that was sort of, that would put off their senior colleagues. And so there was some notion that they were shading their opinions so as not to break out of any sort of groupthink or any sort of embedded ideology. What I tried to say to the folks at the Central Bank of Ireland last night was that the notion of having strong, well-educated or well-traveled, having well-traveled central bankers, people with a lot of international experience, this just encourages, this is just another way of getting at this diversity of views. And I think that when you have it's a competition, but when you have a robust debate over the policy, then you're more likely to come up with a good policy. It's more likely to be a fact-based policy when you have people with opposing views arguing it out with the benefit of all the evidence, as opposed to having someone who has been a creature of that central bank and has always done things that way.
Is it beware ideology? Or is there a different message in this book about the fact that economists or policymakers don't ever seem to learn, watch out for them or something? What is the message?
No, I don't think that the lesson is they never learn. They do learn, but they, like us, face incentives. And it just means that we have to be an educated citizenry. We have to pay attention to what's going on. I know a lot of the things that people talk about in the financial news seem obscure, but it's very important that we keep an eye on our politicians. And I think a lot of time we elect them and then step back and then wait 4 or 5 years until the next election and see how they've done. It's important that we pay attention, and it's important that we hold politicians to account for these things, and not just the immediate short-term things. If you don't like the terms of the bailout deal that came from international organizations in Europe, fine, that's one thing. But these are short-term considerations. I think you have to judge the politicians on how they do over the long term and if they're addressing the needs of the country.
Richard Grossman, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.